Chapter 6, The First St. Peter's.
The Church of Christ was now well established, although it had not yet been formally declared the religion of the Roman Empire.
By the time Constantine died, however, all the major doctrines had been discussed and elucidated.
Likewise, the first heresies appeared, giving theologians food for thought and argument.
On November the 18th, 324, the Basilica of St. Peter's was solemnly consecrated by Pope Sylvester in the presence of the Emperor and his court. In actual fact, work on the Basilica went on until after Constantine's death in 337. It was completed by his son, Constant.
Like its successor, Old St. Peter's was somehow always under construction. When the Romans of today want to talk about something which is never finished, they say, "It's like the building of St. Peter's." But the fact is that after only a year's work, the Basilica was on its feet, so to speak, and this in itself was a massive achievement.
The approach to Old St. Peter's was under a long, covered colonnade which began on the other side of the Tiber. This portico consisted of two rows of marble columns bound together by an architrave and supporting a leaden roof. At the point where the portico crossed the river, it branched in two directions, one limb continuing along the banks of the Tiber, the other following the road which led to the Vatican.
As the pilgrims became ever more numerous, two more rows of pillars were added, forming a triple passage. This covered colonnade was to the advantage not only of the visitors, but of the so-called paternostrari, the vendors of religious objects. As the pilgrims poured past, they must have done a roaring trade, sheltered as they were from wind and weather.
The steps up to the church were in five divisions. Each contained five steps, some of marble and some of porphyry, leading up to the outer vestibule. Pilgrims ascended them on their knees, holding lighted tapers. In the early 6th century, Pope Symmachus placed walls with projecting roofs at the two extremities of the steps to protect the people from the burning sun.
At the top of the steps was a large open terrace paved with rare marbles. Many of the early popes were crowned here. Emperors received their insignia from the pope, kings were met by the pope, and on occasions, papal benediction was given to the people from the terrace.
Three large doors framed by four lofty marble columns admitted to the vestibule. And here stood the penitents of the first degree, begging, we are told, with tears in their eyes, the prayers of those who entered.
From the vestibule, three corresponding doors opened onto the atrium, or large square portico. This was known as the Paradisus, as it was supposed to typify the earthly Eden, while the Basilica was the type of heaven. As if to confirm this, the Paradisus was planted with trees, palms, olives, and cypresses. Around the four sides of the court was an arcaded corridor.
The façade of the basilica was covered with rich designs of mosaic work and other ornamentation. When lit by the noonday sun, it must have been a dazzling sight.
Constantine's basilica was in the form of a cross. It measured 395 feet in length, 212 in width, about half the size of the modern St. Peter's. There were five naves, entered by five great doors. Between the central nave and the transept was a triumphal arch, which glittered with golden mosaics. It represented the emperor being presented by St. Peter to our Lord, to whom he was offering a model of the basilica.
Such was old St. Peter's, a connecting link with the Church of the Catacombs and the central point of the church's history for nearly 1,200 years.
While Constantine undoubtedly has his place as the champion of Christianity and builder of the first St. Peter's, it is not often remembered that on one occasion he let the church down very badly indeed. He condemned to exile Bishop Athanasius, the man who, as a young deacon, had defended Christian orthodoxy against Arianism at the Council of Nicaea.
This troublesome bit of a man was how Julian the Apostate described Athanasius of Egypt, later called the Father of Orthodoxy, and recognized as one of the great Greek doctors of the Universal Church.
Small and energetic, a brilliant biblical scholar, shrewd in argument, Athanasius managed to give trouble to quite a number of people in his time. During his 40 years as bishop, he was five times driven into exile by heretics and politicians. But his enemies failed to shake his profound faith, and he never ceded one inch in his defence of orthodoxy. Athanasius against the world became a battle cry for many a kindred spirit in the centuries that followed.
Athanasius was born around the year 295, probably in Alexandria, at a time when the Egyptian church was divided by schism. When Constantine convoked the Council of Nicaea, Athanasius, then a deacon, went as private secretary to Bishop Alexander. His defence on that occasion of the deity of Christ won him the eternal enmity of the Arians.
When Bishop Alexander died in 328, Athanasius succeeded him. He was already popular with the people, who cried out, "Give us Athanasius the Good, one of the ascetics."
This battling bishop was one of the most outstanding personalities of the early centuries of the Church. He was the first great protagonist of religious freedom against the encroachments of the state, and he paid the price of his commitment. He is in the front rank of the great religious reformers because he recalled Christianity from the barren paths of speculation to a new sense of the reality of the gospel.
Athanasius was interested in the religion of the man in the street. He was concerned with fidelity to truth while allowing a variety of expression. He was also the first bishop to promote monasticism, and the monks showed their gratitude by supporting him in all his difficulties. It was his visit to Rome which gave the first great impulse to the monastic movement, and his Life of Antony, addressed to the monks of the West, also had enormous influence.
But it's his victory over Arianism which marks out Athanasius, for no other struggle against heresy compares with it. It was when he was already Bishop of Alexandria that the Arians accused him to the emperor. And Constantine, who had heard Athanasius defend the truth at Nicaea, gave in to the heretics and destituted him. Athanasius asked for an audience and was unable to obtain it. The Arians had bribed the palace guards, who refused to let the bishop in.
Nothing daunted, Athanasius waited for the emperor on the road outside, and stopping him he said, "Sire, I only ask that those who have condemned me appear in front of your majesty, so that I may confound them in your presence." But Constantine, the first Christian emperor, betrayed his mission. He condemned Athanasius to exile. "The Lord will judge between you and me," replied the bishop.
Today, Athanasius is a canonized saint, and Constantine, a name in a history book and on a triumphal arch.
To Emperor Caesar Flavius Constantine the Great, Pius Felix Augustus, because inspired by the Godhead, by the greatness of his spirit, at one stroke avenged the state upon the tyrant and his entire faction by a just show of force together with his army, the Senate and the people of Rome have dedicated this arch in token of his triumph.
A modern historian comments on the choice of words used for this inscription. The Senate, he says, clung to the old religion and could not bring itself to do more than record that the vengeance exacted by Constantine from the tyrant, that is, Maxentius, was inspired by heaven. The arch represented the unconquered sun as Constantine's patron deity, but his victory was ascribed to an unnamed divine power and to his own greatness of soul.
Caesar Flavius Constantine the Great, Pius Felix Augustus, because inspired by the Godhead, by the greatness of his spirit, at one stroke avenged the state upon the tyrant and his entire faction by a just show of force together with his army, the Senate and the people of Rome have dedicated this arch in token of his triumph.